prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom. I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Thursday, March 7th, 2024. Hi, Dave.
Hey, Melody. Happy National Be Heard Day.
Okay.
About that, each year on the 7th day of March, National Be Heard Day encourages small businesses across the country like ours to make their presence known. And we happen to do that every day, Monday through Friday, on this program, as a matter of fact. The day recognizes over 145 million small businesses in the U.S. striving to be heard over the big business, multinational dominated noise. Around the country, small businesses employ almost one half of the workforce, 47%, as of the end of last year. So standing out among the crowd can indeed be daunting. But small businesses like Discount Gold and Silver Trading are unique in many, many ways. Not only do they supply cutting-edge services and products like physical gold and silver, they also reinvest in small-town America and local neighborhoods in many ways. When small business owners live, work, and play in our communities, their dollars stay there and they grow. Many of these businesses create custom products, solving unique problems for big businesses. Not only that, they support our schools with dollars, sports teams with sponsorships, and mentors in the classroom. So today we salute our fellow small businesses and ask listeners to support them and us whenever you can.
Thank you. 1-800-375-4188. There you go. 1-800-375-4188. Let's go ahead and get to the precious metals today. Gold was up another 780, 2166, 2166. Silver was up 72 cents at $24.56. I'm sorry, that was 7 cents, not 72, 7 cents. And let's see, sorry about that, folks. 24.56. Platinum was up $9 at 924. Palladium was down 4 at 1,045. While the markets were green today, the Dow was up 130 points, the S&P was up 52, and the NASDAQ was up 1.5%. And I guess there was one tech share that took everybody higher. That was NVIDIA. And so there you have it on that. European markets were all positive across the board. Asian markets were all negative across the board. You had the Hang Seng. That was down almost 1 1/3, same as the Nikkei, was down almost 500 points. Bonds, 10-year yield, 4.08 on the 10-year. And oil was down 22 cents at 78.91. Natural gas was down 7%. Wow. At 1.79. Hey, Dave, can you take over, please? I'll be right back.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Let's see. What else? Let's take a look at the Treasury market, where we have, bear with me a minute, the 10-year, bellwether 10-year yield down ever so slightly, 0.016 points to yield 4.09%. The 2-year yield down a little bit more, 0.05 points to close at 4.51%. Still inverted, but closing, it seems, with each and every week, theoretically diminishing the chances for a recession, but that's just pure speculation, really. The U.S. dollar index today down again, another 50.53, a 0.5%, closing here at 102.82. Again, real quickly, as Melody mentioned, the U.S. stock market's all up today. Dow Jones up 0.33%, NASDAQ up 1.5%, S&P up 1%. Not so positive in the Asian markets, where all of them were down. We got the FTSE and DAX up a little bit in Europe. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is today's DGS Coins Market Report, sponsored by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. Now, until Melody gets back from some other important business, we're going to start today's news by talking about at the end of last year, it was as many as 6 interest rate cuts in 2024 they were talking about. Then it fell to 3, maybe 4. Well, now, if the Federal Reserve is on the same page as its colleague Neel Kashkari, who's the Minnesota Fed president, it will only be 1 or at most 2 cuts this year. Yesterday, you may have heard that Kashkari suggested that stronger economic data since the start of the year will likely make it appropriate for the Fed to cut rates only 2 times, or possibly even just once this year. He told the Wall Street Journal, "I was at 2 in December," referring to the number of 25 basis point interest rate cuts he had penciled in when the Fed last made their quarterly economic forecasts. Well, fresh projections are due in 2 weeks at the next policymaking Federal Open Market Committee meeting. Kashkari said, "With the data that's come in, it seems like at a base case, I'd be where I was in December, or potentially 1 fewer, but I haven't yet decided." Well, the median forecasts of his colleagues in December was 3 cuts this year, which would take the Fed funds rate to a range of 4.5 to 4.75%, down from its current 5.25 to 5.5. Kashkari said the base case scenario is that the Fed will not raise rates any further, a view shared by all Fed policymakers at this point, based on their forecasts, again, published in December, as well as remarks since then. If the economy stays on the path it's on and inflation proves to be more entrenched than expected, though, he added, the first thing we do is keep rates where they are for an extended period of time. That is their mantra, higher for longer. With the economy and labor market strong and inflation coming down, he said, I would want to see the argument for why do we think we're actually tamping down the economy if it's ongoing in such a healthy way? Well, we know the Fed does want to avoid a recession. Cash Carry repeated that and said if the economy is doing very well, maybe the economy can sustain this rate environment, when we didn't realize that was possible. The moral, Melody, ladies and gentlemen, investors beware. Well, I mean, on the one hand, one economist is warning that the Fed's reluctance to cut rates sooner could prove the economy's undoing. Mohammed El Orion, who's chief economic advisor at Alliance, says there's an important distinction between being informed by the numbers and being held hostage by them, particularly for an institution whose tools operate on the economy with a lag. El Orion fears the Fed's reliance on inflation and employment data, or over-reliance, could actually backfire, keeping interest rates high for too long a period and actually causing the economy to teeter closer and closer toward a recession and financial instability. Not that I'd call what we are in now as, stable, but the Fed unanimously voted to keep interest rates in this 5.25% to 5.5% range in January after the monthly inflation readings. CPI inched up 0.3% in January over December, and that was higher than expected, but employers at the same time added a surprisingly strong 350,000+ jobs, with the admittedly undercounted headline unemployment rate remaining at 3.7%. And the economy also expanded at an annualized rate of 3.2% in the fourth quarter, also higher than forecast. Now, we have Atlanta Fed President Raphael Bostic, who recently said, the good news is that the labor market and economy are prospering, furnishing the committee, that is the Fed, the luxury of making policy without the pressure of urgency. Bostic expects the Fed's first interest rate to occur in the third quarter this year. That translates to July or later, followed by a pause to assess how the policy change affects the economy. So he's suggesting perhaps that we see a 25-point basis cut at their July meeting, followed by just some watching until perhaps, well, whenever. But that to me suggests no sooner than August or September. But he has concerns that the first hint of an interest rate cut could encourage businesses to boost their spending and investment. And we'll see that evidence in a discussion later on from CEOs about how they're feeling about the economy. He warned this threat of what I'll call pent-up exuberance, which I think is the perfect word, is a new upside risk that I think bears scrutiny in coming months. Well, whatever the case is, El Orion believes the Fed is highly unlikely to face a straight road from here, thanks to a tug of war between goods deflation and high services inflation. Thus, he believes keeping interest rates high for too long could end up creating higher unemployment, financial instability, and economic output loss instead of gently nudging the economy into that Goldilocks-like soft landing. You shall see. Hey, speaking of the job market, applications for jobless benefits were unchanged last week, settling at what economists say is a healthy level as the labor market continues to show strength in the face of elevated interest rates. First-time unemployment claims for the week ending March 2nd were 217,000, matching the previous week's level, according to the Labor Department's latest report out today. The four-week average of claims, which is a less volatile measure, fell slightly by 750 from the previous week to 212,250. Now, again, weekly unemployment claims are broadly viewed as representing the number of layoffs in any given week, They've remained at historically low levels since the pandemic purge of millions of jobs in the spring of 2020. In total, about 1.9 million Americans were collecting jobless benefits of some kind during the week ending February 24th. That's an increase of about 8,000 from the previous week, and actually the most since November. Of course, part of the Fed's goal has been to loosen the labor market and cool wage growth, which it believes contributed to persistently high inflation. Many economists thought the rapid rate hikes would tip the country into recession, but that hasn't happened yet anyway in a broad sense. Certainly the housing industry and general manufacturing in general remains stagnant. But jobs have remained plentiful. And the economy has held up better than expected, thanks largely to strong consumer spending on the backs of their credit cards, which we'll talk more about in the third segment. Employers delivered a stunning burst of hiring to begin this year, again, adding 353,000 jobs in the latest sign of the economy's continuing ability to shrug off these higher interest rates, actually the highest in two decades. And the Labor Department issues its highly anticipated February jobs report tomorrow. Based on the ADP report out yesterday, those numbers should be a lot lower than the 350-some thousand in January. Though layoffs remain at low levels, there has been an uptick in job cuts recently, mostly across technology and media. Hey, across the big pond, European Central Bank has left its key interest rate at a record high as it waits for more confirmation that high inflation in the Eurozone is under control for good. It's never going to be for good, I'm afraid, even as high borrowing costs drag on their stalled economy. The ECB's decision today comes as central banks around the world are trying to judge whether inflation has been tamed to the point that, well, they can start cutting rates, making it cheaper for consumers and businesses to borrow. Also to spend and invest and avoid an economic slowdown that throws people out of their jobs. ECB Pres Christine Lagarde said at her post-meeting news conference, "We are making good progress toward our inflation target." She underlined that we're not there yet, again, adding, "We have a mandate and a mission. We are determined to reach our 2% inflation target in the medium term, and we will be riveted to that." You know, I'm going to have to learn a good Euro accent to make those quotes sound a little more realistic. Many of end market predictions for an ECB rate cut as soon as April have now faded, and expectations among analysts there have shifted toward a first cutback in June. Guard seemed to drop a hint in that direction when she said that the ECB would decide its next move based on incoming economic data, and that we have a little in April and a lot more for our June meeting. And bank liquidity under a microscope. You know, banks not only need to be strong, they also need to be liquid. And that's the message being sent by Fed officials anyway, looking to ensure there won't be a repeat of the three bank failures we saw last year. Bank regulation moves slowly. Whether it's enforcing existing regulations or proposing new ones. Right now, regulators are just finishing their response to the 2008 financial crisis, and they're just beginning their response to last year's. Fed Chair Jerome Powell told Congress yesterday, "We are working on a package of liquidity measures which directly addresses the Silicon Valley Bank situation." The 2000 global financial crisis and the regulatory responses to it, like Dodd-Frank here in the U.S., were both centered on institutions deemed too big to fail. But those banks were given another euphemistic name, global systemically important banks, or GSIBs for short. and brought under supposedly a much more robust regulatory regime. But we'll talk a little bit more about that after we get back from this break. Please stick around. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE talkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Talking away. I don't know what I'm to say. I'll say it anyway. Today is another day to find you shying away. I'm coming for your love, okay?
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm back. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with Dave Allen. And thanks, Dave, for taking it through. I saw a call, and I really wanted to talk to this person, and so I appreciate it. And I don't mean to ignore my listeners, but...
My pleasure. We're talking as the... First segment ended about bank liquidity being under a microscope and how the experience of last year reminded regulators that there are many large banks like Silicon Valley Bank that are still small enough to fail, but still systemically important, to coin a phrase that the Fed types like to use. But it also demonstrated the crucial importance of liquidity as opposed to solvency. No, a potential run on a bank is probably the biggest risk any depository institution faces.
And of course, we saw the what happened yesterday with $1 billion being injected into the New York Community Bank. So
yeah, we'll have a little bit more on that later on in the program.
So I had my own part of that, but it's kind of interesting. And I did a little research. I guess Mnuchin had done it once before. Back in 2009 or something, but, you know, hey, you get a bargain basement deal, why not, right? And
that's what American capitalism all about.
I guess.
Taking an opportunity and running with it.
All right. Well, today you have a Levity is Golden for us.
Well, I do. Before I get there, are there any coin specials you need to mention to listeners?
No, we actually ran some specials yesterday, and they're all taken up. So
that was successful then.
Yes. So thank you all.
Yes. Well, today's topic, Melody, is essentially about staying in school. It's become a controversial subject. Many teens and parents have been asking, is college still worth it?
As long as they pay for it.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're paying for it up front anyway. According to the Federal Reserve, the answer is a resounding yes, it is. It's measured as the wage gap between recent college and high school grads, which has been widening for decades, has grown even more last year, according to this new Fed study. Even so, Americans are falling out of love with the idea of a four-year degree. Cost largely is the biggest issue normally, but also in the changing world we live in, there's been more emphasis on learning a trade as opposed to, a broader liberal arts education or, specialized one like whatever, pre-med, pre-law, engineering, you understand. Economic data show that clearly a college degree still gives individuals a lifetime earnings edge, as well as other benefits. For example, according to the New York Fed in 2023, a recent college grad age 22 to 27 working full-time earned $24,000 more a year than the same age group with only a high school diploma. Back in 1990, the gap was $15,000. I'll put that in perspective. By their early 20s, high school diploma workers likely have several more years of work experience than new college grads, yet they're still getting out-earned, particularly over the long run. But that gap, they say, is just the beginning. The wage premium goes on to double over a worker's lifetime, according to economist David Deming. He was able to follow a group of college-educated workers through their working lives. At age 25, these folks had a 27% premium over high school-only graduates. But by age 55, that premium on average was 60%. Graduate college have higher earnings than those who don't go at all. They say a trucker who earns around $50,000 is about the same as what a newly minted college grad might make. So knowing that, you might question spending a lot of money on a college degree, especially if you can make the same amount of money without one. The thing is, jobs that high school graduates typically get don't see as much wage growth. Truck drivers with years and years of experience don't go on to make considerably more money than when they started. Someone in, say, marketing or HR, or journalism, or other professional, so-called professional jobs might see their salary double or more over their lifetime as they get promoted into supervisory and management positions. And also they say more educated workers are also more likely to have other benefits, like the ability to work remotely if you're into that, access to paid sick and family leave, health insurance, and so forth. Bottom line, Melody, if you can afford it, they say, stay in school as long as you can. And that is this week's Golden.
Well, at one point in time, if you didn't go to college, there were good jobs you could always get. They would put you through school, you'd learn a trade, and so forth. And so much of that has disappeared. So it's even more important, to head off to and continue to stay in school as long as you can and keep educating yourself throughout your whole life.
Yeah,
and,
good point.
But just make sure you pay for it. Don't let government, and other people pay it for you. Do work two jobs. And but most of our listeners have already been through school and retired and So jobs well done, I suppose. You know, we had Jerome Powell. He had 2 days of testimony before Congress, and it seems like some of these America's top executives, of course, they're more confident about the economy. They're looking for, and they have expectations of stronger sales, capital investments, plans that economists say indicate that the economy, you know, might just keep chugging along in the months ahead. The Business Roundtable's quarterly gauge of CEO sentiment is above historical average, signaling that business leaders' economic uneasiness may finally be fading. And you know what? They're usually wrong, so it usually reverses itself at that point in time. And hey, if they're looking forward to tax increases, I don't think they're going to be very optimistic here in the next future. But anyway, the lobbying group index jumped by 11 points. And of course, I think this Business Roundtable, that lobbying group, is probably one of the biggest and most powerful.
Yeah, they're right up there, I think, with the Chamber of Commerce.
Yeah. Yes. So, you know, so I'm not a fan. So they're
too influential when it comes to the making or unmaking or the doing nothing about making good public policy.
And of course, they're always the cheerleaders. So, you know, but what do you say about that?
Well, you know, Cisco CEO Chuck Robbins, who chairs the Business Roundtable this year, said this quarter's results show the resiliency of the economy and suggest accelerating economic activity over the next 6 months. Probably taking some liberties with the data there to say something that precise, but he added, to further strengthen the economy, the U.S. needs to double down on policies that spurred domestic investment and bolster American competitiveness, pointing to a bipartisan tax bill that's yet to be taken up in the Senate. This came out before the draft of tonight's State of the Union address, in which Biden is supposedly going to announce a second term goal, if he's reelected, of increasing taxes on primarily primarily the multinationals from 21 to back to 28%. That is going to change the next quarter's survey results if that comes to fruition, Melody.
Well, you know, we've seen gas prices rise. They're climbing. Gas Buddy, this is according to them, natural price climbed 10 cents. And the nation's average gasoline price for unleaded climbed to $3.34 a gallon on Sunday from just a week before. The national average is up 22 cents from a month ago. And it, you know, it's a couple cents lower than a gallon lower than a year ago, but it's pretty much the same. Regular unleaded had the highest recorded average price we saw back in 2022 of $5, a little over $5. And prices are rising ahead of the annual switch to a higher grade of gasoline for the summer. And it's just a little more expensive to make. And gasoline prices have increased seasonally about 50 cents from a low at the beginning of February to the high in May since the year 2000, Dave.
Wow. Well, it's interesting. My son, who lives close to Melody, told me over the weekend that gas prices down there are, well, I forget what he said they are, but I noted with some surprise that they're the same rates as what we're seeing up here in southeastern Pennsylvania. And over the past, certainly since 2019, which is about as far as my memory goes back, you were always 30 or 40 cents a gallon cheaper. So to hear that we're now both in the $3.35 area was really surprising. to me, and I wonder what's attributing that, if prices are being more constrained up here, or if they're higher down there for other reason.
It's probably a combination of both, because what they're really trying to do around and in this area is to have more of a year-round economy that they hadn't had in the past. So they're bringing in business, they're bringing in events longer, starting. This is my opinion, and
sort of
starting
demand-driven pricing.
So I think it's a little bit more.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yes.
Well, we know gas prices typically start to fall in May around Memorial Day. But spring break season is another reason for higher prices and rising demand. That's according to someone at AAA. Now, fuel terminals, which are storage and distribution facilities, are required to sell only summer gasoline starting May 1st, while gas stations have until June 1st to complete the changeover. Retailers have to sell summer blend gas from June 1 to September 15, which is still required under the Clean Air Act's 1990 amendments. So aren't presidential election years fascinating, Melody?
Well, everybody knows that the State of the Union is tonight.
SOTUS.
But with Sleepy Joe.
By POTUS.
My Sleepy Joe. And you know what's sad, and it goes to show heading into this election, is I don't think it's going to be so much the content as how well he's going to pull it off if he can, because we've seen, I think everybody can agree that there's been a decline, his ability to. And, you know, when you hear a lot of these other, behind closed doors, he's as sharp as a tack. Well, if that's the case, you would also see it on the other open doors, too. So I think that's what everybody's going to be watching, to see if he can pull it off. And how long will the State of the Union be? Is it going to be a short one or a long one?
Yeah,
I think Nixon had the short. Was it Nixon I heard had the shortest one for like 29 minutes or something like that?
This one will be over an hour.
You think?
Yep. Not much over an hour, but longer than. That's my humble prediction.
Well, there'll be a lot of pauses and a lot of clapping. And so you can drag it out. It just depends on how much content that you have in there. There can be a lot of long pauses and so forth. So, but it's going to be, now that everybody kind of knows what he's going to be talking about, you know, taxes, raising taxes, you have a lot of the tax cuts that Trump did in 2017, they expire, but they expire for the people, not the corporations. And it was, I always thought it was kind of interesting that they were, you know, they had extended them to the end of 20, you know, well, actually they expired 25. At the end of 2025, huh?
Yeah. Yes.
So there's basically two more years, 2024 and 2025, before they actually expire. But I thought it's funny that it went through a complete second term. So I figured that they were done just to thinking that he would be reelect, you know. It was a political thing. So.
Oh, absolutely. The 2025 date was.
Yeah, so it would have made it nasty for the next administration. But I think that's going to be the big thing, is the tax cuts. And.
Yeah, I think we'll see posturing over the immigration bill.
Excuse me.
He'll talk about some other policies that he'd like to see that he thinks differentiates himself from the other side, like reinstituting the bonus, if you will, child tax credits. I hope he doesn't spend too much time on this, but I'm afraid he might. This shrinkflation, which is certainly an issue.
It's been going on for decades.
But yeah, that's probably a 5-decade trend when we first saw our cherished Hershey bar starting to get smaller. So it'll be interesting. There'll be a Republican response afterward. There'll be introductions of special guests brought in from around the world. It's an election year, Melody.
Hot air
circulating throughout the country. Temperatures will be up in more ways than one.
And our time is up, too. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hey, one more time today. Welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen. Melody taking care of other client business. This final segment, you know where to get her. 1-800-375-4188. Getting a little bit technical here with this next series of discussions, but it's important because it's timely. It has to do with current news. We know there aren't a lot of attractive options right now when a bank needs to strengthen its balance sheet. One option that's come to the forefront is called credit risk transfer deals, or CRT deals for short. But if such deals do take off here in the U.S., it's certainly going to be too late for New York Community Bancorp. Yesterday, NYCB found itself forced to accept a $1 billion in extremely expensive new equity capital. There's some unintended consequences, both up and down, that we'll talk about in a minute. But CRT deals have become an increasingly popular way for banks to offload risk in Europe, where they're called significant risk transfer operations. But U.S. Regulators haven't gotten totally comfortable with them yet. Here's how it works. A bank can sell credit-linked notes that refer to a pool of loans on its balance sheet, similar to how a classic derivative works. It actually doesn't sell the loans, but it does effectively sell most of the credit risk associated with them. So if the loan performs well, outside investors make a healthy return. If the loans underperform, well, then those investors end up with some losses. Now, the bank sometimes receives a modest amount of new capital from outside investors. More importantly, it avoids having to realize a loss by selling loans that in the current interest rate environment would almost certainly fetch well below their face value. After credit risk is moved off a bank's balance sheet, the pool of loans becomes much less risky. And because it's less risky, regulators can require the bank to hold less capital against it. Well, that so-called regulatory arbitrage, moving the loans from being treated as high risk to low, is how these maneuvers free up capital for a bank. Still, deals like these remain extremely rare in the U.S. The Fed's allowed Huntington Bank shares, Morgan Stanley, Santander, and U.S. Bancorp to do relatively small CRTs on their auto loan portfolios. Now, a clear green light from the Fed encouraging more transactions like these would help banks shore up their balance sheets more easily, but doesn't necessarily mean it's good policy. And up until now, Greg Hertrick at Nomura says regulatory thinking has not included a carte blanche CRT for every bank. Well, NYCB was looking at these structures, but the Wall Street Journal reports that U.S. officials have expressed reservations about any such deal for them. In the end, the bank went the old-fashioned route of simply selling equity at a deep discount. Thus, for CRTs to take off here, probably need to be pioneered by larger, so-called safer banks, rather than one in crisis mode. I'm not sure they exist anymore, ladies and gentlemen. Well, as a follow-up, here's some impressive financial arithmetic, as Melody mentioned in the first segment. By injecting $1 billion of new capital, former Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin caused NYCB's valuation to rise by more than $2 billion. At the close of trade on Tuesday, NYCB had 722 million shares outstanding, which meant that at a price of $3.22 a share, it was worth $2.3 billion. Well, yesterday, the Mnuchin-led financial injection deal was announced. His consortium's investing just a tad over $1 billion at $2 per share, implying a purchase of 525 million shares. As a result, the total number of shares outstanding will rise to roughly 1.25 billion. When the stock closed yesterday at $3.47 per share, that looked like a relatively small rise in the stock price of just under 8%. In market cap terms, however, it was a lot bigger. With 1.247 billion shares outstanding, a share price of $3.47 means a market cap of $4.3 billion, a rise of $2 billion from the closing level on Tuesday. Well, in reality, the rise in NYCB's market cap is greater still thanks to instruments called warrants, which are likely to be exercised at $2.50 per share. And when that happens, their share count will rise by another 315 million. That'll mean another 1.1 billion in market cap, assuming the shares don't rise at all from their closing level yesterday. So NYCB has a book value now of $10.3 billion, or $11.3 billion after the new checks have cleared, which means that its new $4.3 billion valuation isn't particularly impressive. All the same, significant value was created yesterday. Hey, switching subjects for a moment, the latest data on the inner dynamics of the labor market pointed to a steady-as-she-goes rate of job openings, as well as hirings and separations. Yesterday's JOLTS survey, Job Openings and Labor Turnover survey, showed 8.86 million job openings at the end of January, which is not meaningfully different from the 8.89 million at the end of December, a drop of roughly 30,000. Perhaps more importantly, job openings today at about 8.9 million are much higher than they were in the few years leading up to the pandemic, when they were closer to 7 million a month. Now, the rate at which companies hired edged down with 100,000 fewer workers hired in January than in December. rate at which workers voluntarily quit their jobs also edged down in January, while the rate of layoffs was unchanged at very low levels, despite some high profile layoff announcements. After the surprisingly strong January jobs market, there was some speculation that the U.S. labor market was heating back up after several months of consistent cooling. That was said by Nick Bunker, who's the economic research director at Indeed's hiring lab, who added the latest JOLTS data undercuts that argument in a large way. In a nutshell, employers continue to bring jobless workers onto their payrolls, but people with a job are staying put. And finally today, our latest American Survival newsletter hit the streets yesterday. Sorry, it was late this week. I was under the weather earlier. As we know, high interest rates, like inflation, have consequences, some intended, some not. Fed Chair Jerome Powell told congressional lawmakers this morning that he expects interest rates to start coming down yesterday morning, but he isn't ready yet to say when. In prepared remarks for his mandated semi-annual appearances on Capitol Hill, he said that his Fed colleagues remain focused on the risks that inflation poses and don't want to ease up too quickly. At the end of the Fed's January meeting, Powell said the policymaking Federal Open Market Committee doesn't expect that it will be appropriate to reduce the target range until it has gained greater confidence that inflation is moving sustainably toward 2%. Whew. Yes, it's Fed speak, so it's a mouthful. In the meantime, consumers' average credit score, which had steadily risen over the past decade and a half from a low of 686 in October 2009 to a peak of 718 last year, fell for the first time in almost 11 years. Well, that it fell only slightly to 717 6 months later comes as a real big surprise, in my humble opinion. FICO is the developer of one of the scores most widely used by lenders. FICO credit scores range between 300 and 850 and are used to determine, generally, a borrower's likelihood of repaying a loan. Average nationwide credit scores bottom out during the Great Recession's housing crisis, when there was a huge increase in mortgage foreclosures. They steadily climbed higher until the pandemic, when government stimulus programs and skyrocketing household savings helped scores jump to their historic high in April last year. Since the end of the pandemic, however, consumers have been relying more and more on credit cards to make ends meet, and it looks like that may be finally catching up with them. Ethan Dornhelm, who is a FICO vice president, said of the notch downward, it's a notable milestone, even though it's just 1 point. Higher interest rates and consumer prices have weighed on most Americans' financial standing, especially during this presidential election year. FICO findings confirmed recent Fed reports showing that households overall are falling deeper into debt, causing an increase in credit card balances and an increase in missed payments. As of October, credit card holders had a utilization rate of 35%. That is, they used 35% of their eligible credit, up from 33% a year earlier. And over 18% of them had a more than 30-day past due missed payment against their accounts. That's up from 16%+ the year before. Dornhelm noted another likely driver is that saving rates have trended down to zero, and those savings cushions that many consumers have had have disappeared. During yesterday's Q&A period with the House Financial Services Committee members, Powell said he needs a little bit more data before moving on with rate cuts. He said, we think the strength of the economy and the strength in the labor market and the progress we've made, we can approach that step carefully and thoughtfully and with greater confidence. When we reach that confidence, he added, the expectation is we will do so sometime this year. We can then begin dialing back that restriction on our policy. Well, if the committee members were looking for new ground on monetary policy or the Fed's outlook, they likely left disappointed. The Powell's comments did show that Fed officials don't want to lose the progress made against inflation to date and will make decisions based on incoming data rather than anyone's preconceived notions. That despite warnings from other experts like economist Mohammed L. Orion that we mentioned last segment. Powell also once again noted, we believe that our policy rate is likely at its peak for this tightening cycle, but the economic outlook is uncertain and ongoing progress toward our 2% objective is not assured. He warned that lowering interest rates too quickly risks losing the battle against higher inflation and likely causing them to have to raise rates further, while waiting too long poses danger to economic growth. Well, and apparently credit scores too. In recent weeks, market expectations of cut rates have changed following multiple statements from Fed officials. The January meeting helped cement the Fed's cautious approach, with their statement explicitly saying that rate cuts aren't coming yet, despite the market's generally good outlook. Well, as things stand today, futures market pricing points to the first cut coming in June, part of four reductions this year, totaling a full percentage point. It's a little bit more aggressive than the Fed's December projection of three cuts. We'll see what they say in a couple of weeks at their next meeting. Despite the resistance to move forward on cuts, Powell noted the movement the Fed has made toward its goal, but without hammering the labor market and overall economy. He said the economy has made considerable progress toward these objectives over the past year. Way to go, Jay and company, right? Well, the Fed's preferred inflation measure, the PCE index, is now running at a 2.4% annual rate, 2.8% if you exclude the volatile food and energy prices in the core reading that the Fed actually prefers to focus on. Powell added that Americans' longer-term inflation expectations appear to have remained well anchored. So, what does all that mean? Probably means keep your hat on for now. Rates aren't likely to start coming down until at least midsummer. In the meantime, one thing you can and should do, hide your credit cards, all of them. Because the last thing you want, especially if you're looking to buy a new house with a median price of around $400K, a new vehicle with an average price of over $49,000, or major appliance, is a falling credit score when the time does come. And believe me, that time will be here before we know it. Some things to think about, ladies and gentlemen. It's always good to step back and take stock, especially when you think things are going well. Well, look, that's all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back next Tuesday. Melody will be back tomorrow with Butch to close out the week. Also be on the lookout for our weekly What a Rush of Gold and Silver blog in your email inboxes after the sun next rises. Thanks to always, to our production engineer, Todd Waite, and to you for tuning into Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there. Have a good evening. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.